Hello, beer fans. Welcome to the Suds with Buds podcast. We are on location today.
Out of the studio, but still into the pints.
You'd probably have better luck with beer.
Suds with Buds on location.
At Plaza Bowl. And we have a special guest.
The special guest.
Today's special guest is Trevor. How you doing, Trevor?
I'm well. How you doing?
I'm not too bad. Okay. Now, the thing I always ask people whenever they come on is, when you get home from a long day at work, what do you reach for in the fridge? What's your go-to beverage? What's your after-work beer?
My after-work beer?
Yeah.
I'm pretty faithful to a can of Red Racer IPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a nice, easy...
Yeah, you know, it's a great IPA, it's a great price, and it's... Yeah, it's just kind of my take-me-home beer.
That's your beer that you have in your fridge right now? Excellent. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Trevor?
Well, I'm the owner of Plaza Bowling down on 118th.
You might be able to hear bowling going
on
right
bit
now.
A little bit of action in the background. it's a family business. It was started in 1959 by my grandpa Laurie, sort of during the heyday of bowling, and he carried on with the business until 1977 when my dad partnered with him and got involved. They co-ran it until the mid-80s, and then my dad's had it ever since, and then I just took over in January.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have so many questions to ask you about, like, what was it like to grow up basically in a bowling alley, because I can just picture you being just learning to walk.
For sure.
Kind of growing up here and everything, but we'll get to that in a minute, because now it's time for today's featured beer.
Suds with Buds featured beer.
All right, today's featured beer is from Bench Creek Brewing, Black Spruce Porter. And Trevor had it on tap, so we figured, hey, this is a perfect one to have. I'm just going to read the info sheet here. It's a 5.8 ABV, 40 IBU, 32 SRM. Let's have a taste of this and see what we think. Cheers.
Cheers.
So what do you think?
I'm a fan. I like it. I think it has tons of that, like, really neat dried fruit on it. And
Like pruney kind
Clean finish, not too bitter. I think it's super solid and goes great with a game of bowling.
Yeah. There's a bit of coffee, a little bit of chocolate, not too much though. Not like sometimes you'll see the coffee porters and they're quite strong.
Almost getting syrupy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is more... there's a time and place for that too.
Yeah.
But no, like you said, this is very drinkable. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So now are you a porter guy normally or?
Yeah, I like flavor really in beer, and that's not saying it has to be, you know, porters and stouts and IPAs. I think you can get a lot of great flavor off a lager. You can get a lot of great flavor off, you know, pilsners and sours and everything. I pretty much like beer in general.
Yeah, I'm a lot the same way. I have one friend who's always pushing me towards like to try more porters because he's always loved Guinness and those style, the European style and the Irish style stouts and porters and things. So it's definitely not something I have a lot of experience in, but definitely trying new things.
Yeah, it's nice to have something with big flavor like this and just sip it slow and enjoy one or two and maybe move on to something a little more sessionable.
Sessionable. Great.
Beer news time!
Suds with Buds Beer News.
Okay, let's just jump into some beer news here quick, because like I said, I have a lot of questions I want to ask you. Just for beer news, I saw recently that the third edition of the Craft Beer Guide for Alberta has released.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of this project. I don't know how much you know about it, but I used to be able to list on one or two hands all the breweries in Alberta. Now you need a book to be able to keep track of everyone.
And I'm glad that book exists because it's, I like the way they frame the breweries. I like the way they feature, you know, four or five or their core offerings and tell a little story about the brewery. I think you can get a sense of kind of the brewery's personality and their philosophies on what they're trying to do just from you know, thumbing through that book. I think it's great.
Yeah, and it would make for a great, you know, if you ever want to do a road trip or a weekend or even day trip, you know, you grab that book and go and probably hit a few of the breweries on the way.
A little guide.
Yeah, especially the ones out of the way.
Like, yeah.
Who's ever been to Edgerton? I haven't.
I have not.
Even playing hockey, I never ended up out there. Like I said, Trevor's our guest today, and I have a lot of questions for him because this is kind of a coming home story for you, I guess, in a way, in that this is the way I understand it. Your father was kind of ready to retire, and you stepped up and said, hey, I'm the guy. I'm the guy for the job.
Yeah, we've always kind of looked at this space and just kind of dreamland. We've always talked about the things that we could do with it. And, you know, about 2 years ago, my dad started talking about selling it, and we were living out in Vancouver at the time, and just kind of started bouncing ideas off my wife and, you know, maybe taking the dream ideas and starting to get a little more serious about it. And we just, we talked more and more about it and started kind of getting into the nitty-gritty on the business and thought it was a good opportunity to go after.
Thought it made sense.
Yeah.
Was there additional pressure for you because, you know, you're kind of taking over the family tradition in a way?
I don't think I see it as pressure. I think it's easy to get motivated because I think there is, you know, there's that element that this is a family business and this has been successful for a long time, and it motivates me to try and, you know, do everything I can to make sure that it's successful long term.
And you talk about success, and you've been having a lot of success recently. It seems like you're very busy.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. People seem to be excited about what's going on down here, and we're, you know, happy that we can be hopefully a part of something great happening in the city.
And there aren't many of these classic five-pin lanes left.
Yeah, no, it's not overly common to see these anymore. Some have maybe, unfortunately, gone out of business, or possibly they've maybe modernized and gone a little bit different direction with who they're trying to appeal to. And for us to have this vintage space I consider myself very lucky to have a space like this to be able to add some elements to.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be in this position to be able to move forward with such an amazing space if it wasn't for the hard work that your father and your grandfather put
yeah.
in.
Totally.
And when I'm sure when your grandfather started, and even your dad, like, bowling, it was really popular. Like, lots of small, it's like curling rinks. Lots of small towns had a bowling alley, right? And even the city had many.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, entertainment has changed so much over the years, and there's so much you can do throughout a city. There's so much you can do from within your own home, and we're also connected nowadays. And so bowling, yeah, maybe isn't in the middle of its heyday, but we think it's a really neat activity to bring people down and get you out of your home and have a beer on a Friday night and actually get some movement in, and we think it's a pretty, pretty fun thing to do.
A little bit of exercise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of fun things to do, now, so you obviously grew up in these lanes, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah.
You spent probably a lot of weekends here as a kid and after school and stuff. So are you just like one hell of a bowler then, or?
You know, I'm not the bowler that people expect me to be.
Okay.
I did a lot of casual bowling growing up. Yeah. I played a lot of sports growing up, so, you know, team wind-up parties, school trips, birthday parties. That was when sort of a lot of my bowling was done. I didn't do really as much league bowling and things like that because I was involved in different sports and activities. But this was just always kind of a focal point for our family. You know, we gathered here, and it's just always been a really important part of our lives.
I see. So so you're like me then with hockey, where like basically everyone else in my family played at a high level, and then I was just the house league guy.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I'm like house league bowler, yeah. Or worse.
What's your best game?
225.
That's pretty
good,
right?
That was probably a good 10 years ago. I've kind of picked it up again in the last couple months, and I'm having a tough time breaking 200.
200? So, yeah, I'm happy if I break 100. So.
Yeah, you know, 100's a good milestone. It's it's a starting point.
Stepping stones, yeah, right? Trevor? Yeah. Awesome. So we're talking about how this bowling alley's been in your family. You have some really cool photos up. You know, like the vintage The Avenue back in the 60s and 70s and stuff. And there's this really cool neon sign. I was just wondering, is there a story behind that? What happened to the neon sign, the Plaza Bowl neon sign?
Yeah, the sign is probably the thing we get asked about the most from that photo because it's such an amazing sign. And just getting word recently that it was removed by the building and the landlords in 1982. So it's been gone a long time, and unfortunately we don't know where it is, because if we did, we'd be doing everything possible to get it back.
All right. So people of Edmonton, if you know where the sign is,
find the sign for us, please.
Give Trevor a call. One of the things that I learned when I was watching some of the interviews and stuff that you've done on TV, they used to have a promotion where if you bowled a perfect game, you got a free suit
free suit from the tailor upstairs.
From the tailor upstairs. Yeah. That's just such a classic.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. So do you? What do you guys have for, what do you have now?
We don't have anything divine for a perfect game. I need to get something going, and maybe it's the suit thing again. Maybe I reach out to one of the good shops in town and see if they want to get the collab promotion going, because a good crisp suit, or maybe we need to do something for the women if they throw a perfect game, but it's been a while. We haven't had a perfect game here. We've only had one, and it was in 1963.
Wow.
Yeah, so we need some bowlers to come down here and
bowlers,
and
if you can hear that, get down here. They need a perfect game.
Yeah. There'll at least be a beer on the house for you out there.
Awesome. You do have one little promotion that people get if they get lucky or get good at bowling.
There's no luck involved in throwing three strikes in a row. So three strikes in a row is called a turkey, and it came out of the U.S. when years ago. One of the alleys started giving away small turkeys.
Like a frozen turkey?
A frozen turkey, if you rolled three strikes in a row. So it just became known over time as a turkey, and people aren't really as excited to give away or receive a small turkey anymore. So okay. We've got a nice pin for you if you accomplish the feat.
That's neat, because I think I've actually I think I've had one or two of those in my bowling career. So.
And it's not an easy thing to do.
You start getting pretty, you get nervous when you get after two.
Sure.
You're like, all right, don't screw this up.
I had someone yesterday ask me if two strikes followed by a spare was called a quail. They just wanted it to be called something.
Something?
So we might have to get some quail pins.
That'd be great. Now, one of my... My earliest memory of this place was when I was going to college here at Nate, which is right across the street from you guys here. And I was living in the neighborhood, and every once in a while we'd say, you know what, I don't feel like going to my afternoon classes. Come down here and visit your dad. And it was cheap games and fairly inexpensive macro beers. But, you know, it was good times. I think I remember drinking Kokanee down here. What are you guys doing to kind of bring the student population over?
Yeah, right now we're trying to get involved and engaged, and you know, we just sponsored a big paper rock scissors tournament that's going on at the end of the month through the forestry faculty, and we're just trying to get to know the students and connect with them a little bit. We've got a Monday to Friday special. It's not limited to students, but they're the ones who can usually take advantage of it the most. So games. And sleeves of beer, $4.95 each till 5 o'clock Monday to Friday. So that's something that, you know, helps the cost.
Yeah, and you know, as a student you can come down here and, you know, spend a couple hours and you maybe spend $20, right?
Exactly. So that's kind of the goal.
It's hard to argue with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Speaking of Nate being next door, and you guys are located on 118th Street, which is the city's been actively trying to kind of turn this avenue around for the last, I'd say, probably 10 or 15 years. There's been lots of initiatives. They've branded it Alberta Avenue.
Yeah.
There's street posts, and they're trying to make it pedestrian friendly and business friendly and all the things. Have you guys been involved in that at all? Or
yeah, I've just started getting involved because obviously I'm new here to the Ave, and I've just met with the executive director of the Alberta Business Association and Alberta Avenue Business Association, and we're starting to see, you know, how I can get involved more, and whether it's sitting on the board or just attending the regular meetings. But it's something that I do want to be involved with, and you know, maybe hopefully have something to contribute to the team.
There's a lot of really neat old buildings and neat little shops. You're next to a vintage video game store and, you know, a couple restaurants and a bar and you know, there's all sorts of neat little things up here.
Yeah, it's a really neat area, and there's a lot of great people living in the neighborhood. That's the one thing that has been super meaningful for me being down here is the amount of people who have come down, and they're excited at the changes, and they're excited that, you know, this is happening in their neighborhood, and that's been pretty awesome.
Another question that's really been on my mind is why five-pin bowling?
Well, five-pin is a Canadian game, which a lot of people don't necessarily know. So it was invented in 1909 in Toronto by a bowling alley owner whose customers were complaining that the game was a bit too strenuous. So he basically reduced the amount of pins, made the smaller ball, and invented a game that we think is super neat. It's easy for people to do. It's easy for people to throw. It's not necessarily easy to score, but it's just an activity that kind of the non-serious bowler can come down, pick up a ball, and everyone can throw it. You know, we love having kids down here. Kids can throw the balls, and we just think it's a really neat game. And
everyone has the same size ball, basically.
There's some small variation for the serious bowlers. They get pretty technical with the size, but I mean, it's nothing like the kind of 6 pound to 12 pound spread, you know, that you might see with
the bigger balls.
Yeah. So
I see. And it says here that they were originally hard rubber. What are the balls made out of these days?
Well, a lot of them are rubber still.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what yours are?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And looking at your balls, they look like they were manufactured probably in the early to mid 70s.
Yeah. These balls are from the late 70s still.
Really?
Down here. Yeah.
And
yeah, so.
Like, how long do they last?
I think they're getting a little tired. Okay. I think it's something that we'll probably look at maybe switching out in the next couple of years. The challenge is finding something that still has the vintage aesthetic that can fit this space. You know, we're not going to come bring down some bright red bowling balls or something like that. And that's the challenge with this space in general, is we think the vintage aesthetic is really important to the appeal to the alley. And so it's trying to find, you know, new pieces in good condition that can suit the space.
Yeah. Well, and they look like big marbles to me. Oh. They kind of have that.
The swirl, and
no two are alike. I think that's kind of neat too.
Yeah, it's really neat. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of your other equipment here then.
Sure.
So you're like, it looks like your ball returner is the same thing, like Art Deco style. I'd say probably 60s.
Yeah, all original.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so 50s then.
Yeah. Wow. 59 would have went in. So yeah, they've been many different colors over the years. They've been grasshopper green and beige and whatever this cream is right now. And so I think this is the right color for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They went through all the fad colors of the 70s and the 80s and everything. Okay, I'm just kind of looking at some of your equipment. I see some of the black lights up. So you guys must have done neon at some point in your tenure.
It was big in the 90s. And so my dad, he sort of did the minimal amount to get it going. He didn't, you know, go over the top with, you know, kind of the space cosmic type stuff on his walls, but he just put in the black lights. There's a finish on the lanes that actually caused the lanes to glow when the black lights are turned on, so that was really what he added.
Oh, that's neat.
And he actually added a pretty serious sound system in the 90s to jump on that trend, which is benefiting us now, because now we have a great system in here for the music. But the neon isn't something we really use ever, to be honest. It's just something that, you know, isn't the direction that we wanted to take the alley.
Do you think though that kind of kept some of these, like the mom and pop bowling alleys, like alive during the 90s?
I think it did. I think it was a big trend for the alleys, and I know that my dad capitalized on that and had a lot of business from it, and it was a good thing for the time, for sure.
Yeah, it kept, and I think it got like some younger people maybe that grew up in that era interested in bowling and five pin in general.
I think so. I think, you know, maybe you come down and you do some neon, and then you think about maybe doing some, you know, youth leagues or things like that. And I think it was a great thing.
Okay, we're also talking about your equipment and everything that you guys have here that's all original. Now, can you just kind of tell me? You showed me in the back, your pin setters,
mm-hmm.
and they look super like heavy industrial machines.
Yeah.
And they're from Switzerland.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so when did those get installed?
Those were, it was late 60s. I want to say it was 67 that they went in.
Okay.
So before that, it was actual pin setters. And people would sit back there, and every time you'd throw a ball, the pin setter would jump out and remove the knockdown pins and set and make sure that there was a good set on the new ones.
So there would be little spots on the lanes where they would know
markings,
to set up
the
balls?
Yeah, and
the
markings are still there, because we need to make sure that even with our current pin setters, that if we make an adjustment to the machine, that the pin still lands exactly where it needs to.
So now, is that something that your father would have done when he was a little guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a pin setter back in the day, for sure. Yeah.
And how many pin setters would they have?
That's a good question. I don't actually know. From what I know, you'd have one on each side, but it with this many lanes, it had to be a couple.
You would think.
Yeah.
You think that job would pass WCB standards?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they would love that. Yeah.
have some little kids back there running around setting pins.
Kids. Yeah.
We promise we won't throw the ball. Go set those pins
exactly.
For us. That's awesome. No, I love to see all the vintage equipment that you guys have, and basically how things have basically remained unchanged here. There's wood paneling, and all these benches are just really classic, and they feel homey. They feel like our generation's parents' basement is what the it feels like.
It absolutely does. And yeah, there's something really neat about it. There's something neat, I think, about just the activity in general and the aesthetic down here, and that it, yeah, it takes you to a time that maybe some people are nostalgic to, or maybe, you know, people our age weren't around for it, but there's just kind of an appreciation for, you know, days gone by down here.
So we've talked about the past. Now, what are your plans for the future here in this space?
Yeah, so really for us, when we looked at taking over the business, we looked at bowling and we thought, you know, bowling is great, and we know that bowling is great, but maybe when we look at the business, maybe bowling is only half of why people would want to come down here. And we said, you know, what could the other half be? And for us, you know, craft beer is something I've been passionate about for years. You know, before I moved out west, we were at Sugar Bowl pretty much every weekend, making our way through the list, and then we were out in Vancouver for the craft beer boom. And so for us, there was a no-brainer to try and bring that culture into the alley. You know, music was a big part of what we thought we could be great at and have lots of, you know, great indie and bluesy and rock type music, you know, down here. Food, for us, we wanted to get some, you know, really simple but quality artisan food down here. You know, we needed to get into brand and website and social media and all that stuff. That's obviously critical for any business
It's a lot of work for me, and I just do this on the side.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I find myself looking at my phone a lot more than I used to, but I've really enjoyed it so far, and I'm not a social media expert by any stretch, but I've had a lot of fun with it so far. And then the big thing for us was hospitality and making sure this was just a place that, you know, the staff were always making people feel welcome and making sure we're, you know, getting to know our customers and making this a really fun place to be.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to have beer, especially great beer, then, yeah, you do need to have a little bit of something to snack on while you're eating.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Especially if you're also exercising at the same time.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So having some good food offerings is pretty important, and make sure that...
So what do you guys have on the menu then right now?
Yeah, we just have a couple press sandwiches right now. So we do a classic grilled cheese, and it's made with a two-year-age cheddar on sourdough. And then it's served with kettle chips and a pickle. And then we are doing a ham and Swiss, and so that's some mortadella Swiss on a light rye. So... just good ingredients and super tasty.
Sounds like you know what you're talking about when it comes to food and beer, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I care a lot about food and beer, so.
Speaking of the food in there, and you have craft beer, can you kind of take us through what you guys are currently offering and kind of, do you do rotational taps or do you have steady ones?
We've been kind of tinkering, and for me, I come from like a pretty big restaurant background where I was working for the Formosa Pizzeria Group, and
okay.
So amazing job that I had and was running their beverage program, and making a change is something that took, you know, you want to change a beer, it's going to take you 6 months by the time you work with your supplier,
okay.
Work out costing, work out, you know, all your logistics, and so for me, it's been great, you know, tinkering with the list and, you know, bring in a beer and sell one keg of it and bring in something else, and that's been super fun for me. So we're starting to hit a bit of a groove with our list, because I'm finding we're getting some styles that, or some beers that really are representative of their style. So right now we're doing two Parallel 49 beers from Vancouver. We're doing their craft lager and their pale. The craft lager is I think a great lager. It's clean and crisp, but has enough bitterness on the end that it just kind of keeps you wanting more. The pale ale is a little bit hop forward, but still has a really nice malt to balance it out. We're doing Blind Man's IPA. I'm pretty much a fan of everything Blind Man is brewing nowadays. They're down in central Alberta, in Lacombe.
Is that the Longshanks?
The Long Shadows.
Long Shadows.
Long Shadows, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
It's really West Coasty and crisp and clean and light on the malt, and I think it's a really nice IPA. And then we're doing the Situation from just off White Ave there. We're doing their Saison, which is, like we were chatting about earlier, kind of ever-changing. And it's I think it's a really approachable Saison, and it's, you know...
I think it's blueberry? Or
right now it's the blackberry Earl Grey tea infused, yeah. And I think it's great because it's got a lot of flavor, but that seems to come, you know, from the infusion and from the yeast, as opposed to relying on kind of the hops and the malt to get your flavor. So people who maybe aren't as into the hops, I think you can still get a really flavorful, enjoyable beer with the Saison.
Yeah, and I know in the past they've done mango oolong.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe in the future, I'd like to see them do a green tea, something green tea in the future.
Yeah.
That'd be neat.
And then our last tap is the Bench Creek, and we're doing the porter that we're sipping on right now. Okay. So pretty good balance. You get some light, you get some hops, you get some malt.
Yeah, you got to have that IPA. Yeah. You got that lager for the everyday folks. And
When you've only got five taps, you try and create a really good balance. And I do like having only five taps because it allows me to make sure our beer is always fresh.
And that's one of the most important things that I'm learning in craft beer is that
it's huge.
Fresh is best.
Yeah, especially with those hop beers, a dry hop beer, it's got to be fresh to get those good fruit aromas. And
absolutely, yeah. I'm guilty of, I have a few of the Alley Cat Dragons in my beer cupboard that I probably shouldn't have in there. I should probably drink them. But
you give to your friends when they come.
Yeah,
over.
Well, or maybe one day we'll do a dragon festival and we'll have, because I have the last 8 or 10 of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the flavor profile changes starting with the oldest ones.
Yeah,
to
you're
the new
probably
ones.
Not going
to
get a lot of fruit on the old ones.
Yeah. It might be a little bitter. Sometimes they turn start to turn sweet, I think.
That makes sense.
It's like a weird sugar from the hops, but that's just my experience. But I'm so bad for my boots covered, man.
Your beer cellar.
It's not, because you're not supposed to cellar IPAs. I accidentally I lost a few in there, and then I found them, and I was like, okay, now I need to keep doing this. I gotta have the collection going.
It's funny, I get stressed when we drink our wines, our red wines, too early, and then I get stressed when I drink my beer too late.
Exactly. I do have a few, the ones you're supposed to bottle age, that's kind of fun. I'm looking forward to that. I got a couple of the Alley Cat barley wines I'm aging and looking forward to.
Totally.
Awesome. So what was your first introduction to craft beer?
Holy, I've kind of always been interested in beer before, the craft beer trend took off. And years ago, I worked at a pub that focused on international beers. This is, before the beer trend. So they had 120 beers in their cooler.
Wow.
And you got these little passports and you could work your way through. So my now wife and now sister-in-law, we would meet after work and we would, taste through 3 or 4 different beers from around the world, and we always loved beer and we were always really passionate about it. And then when local producers started popping up and making this great beer, that was just incredible to us. Yeah, that was one of the neatest things, and knowing that we could get this beer that didn't have to get shipped throughout across the world to come to us, and local producers and money going into the local economy and everything about it was just so exciting for us. And so really, from I guess the second we knew it existed, we were we were in.
And then that kind of leads into the you were basically in Vancouver while the whole craft beer explosion was happening.
Yeah. When we got out there, there was a number of breweries in Vancouver. There was more on the island at the time, and just in that time we were there from 2011 to 16, and it just completely exploded. We were living in East Vancouver, and it seemed like within a matter of 2 years our we had 6 breweries within 5-minute drive of our home. And that was incredible. Just going and seeing what everyone was doing. And you start to love you love the IPAs from this place and the sour from this place and whatever it might be. Everyone just kind of got known for certain things. It was great.
So it sounds like you kind of love all kinds of beer. Did you go through the phases most craft beer enthusiasts go to, where you migrate towards the IPAs first and then you kind of spill off into all the other kinds?
I did for sure, and I don't know if I'll ever get out of the IPA phase. I just love them. I love the bitterness. I love the fruitiness from the hops, and I'll always kind of be there, I think. But I love that sours are trending right now. I think it's such a neat style of beer for people to drink, and it's nice that they're a little lighter in alcohol as well and can have maybe one more. And I bounce around for sure, but I definitely have kind of my old faithful styles.
So do you have a favorite? Would it be the Red Racer? If you went to a restaurant, is that normally what you look for? Or
I tend to lean towards IPAs. I love seeing, the Bench Creek IPA is actually one that I'm a huge fan of. It's not usually the style of IPA I go for. This one's a little more malt forward and kind of a little less bitter than some of the other ones out there.
Okay.
But I've really started to like that one quite a bit. I love seeing the Blind Man out there on tap.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, I think seeing those on tap, Situations IPA, I think is super solid.
That's
as well.
Really good.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
I get a lot of fruit notes and stuff.
Totally,
like that.
And again, it's got a decent amount of malt to it,
it's bitter, but then it finishes really, really smooth.
Yeah, for sure.
Now it's time for everyone's favorite part of the show, the top five.
5.
So for the top 5 today, I decided, you know what? Trevor seems to know a lot about beer. He probably knows more about beer than I do. So Trevor, what were your favorite 5 beers when you were living in Vancouver, lower mainland of BC area?
Sure, yeah. So in no particular order, I've got Parallel 49
okay.
on the list for sure. Those guys do so many neat brews. They do all sorts of neat one-offs and collabs with people. I've got Four Winds. If you haven't had a chance to try Four Winds, you see some of their stuff around, head over to Sherbrooke or wherever, and their Juxtapose IPA is one of my favorite IPAs of all time. Bridge Brewing, they're a small brewery in North Vancouver, and they're started by a couple from Calgary that moved out to Vancouver and eventually got into brewing, and it feels like you're almost going to, like, I don't know, you feel like you're in the wilderness because North Vancouver is what it is, and
yeah.
It's yeah, just this really neat brewery, amazing stouts, nice pale ales. I've got Brass Neck, and those guys have kind of changed the, I think, tasting room culture in Vancouver and brought a really neat aesthetic to what they're doing, and always creative brews, lots of beers brewed, and they just seem to be always trying to push the limits of what you can brew. And then the last one is Strange Fellows, and they were, luckily for us, they were closest to where we were living at the time, and amazing IPAs, amazing saisons, always one or two really great sours on the go, and super great people as well. So I'd say those are my top 5.
All right, so do you want to run through them, just the names real quick?
Sure. So it's Strange Fellows,
okay.
Brass Neck, Parallel 49, Four Winds, and Bridge Brewing.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
if anyone's out there wants to check those out, Trevor recommends them, so that's good. So those are your top 5.
Yep.
I like that. There's some good choices, 4 of which I've never had before, so I'll have to look out for those. When you say change the tasting room culture, what do you mean by that?
I just thought it was really unique the way they did it. They did this really rustic room. I think that the story is they tore down an old barn and used that for their millwork.
Okay.
And then it was just, it's a really involved space. Their bar seating area actually has seating on the side that you'd normally have bartenders. So you're basically sitting with your shoulder beside the person pouring your beer, and it's just this really open environment. And
okay.
They've always got great food trucks parked out front, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they changed it or they just did a really excellent job of it.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I like the idea of having a tasting room and then also having food trucks outside.
Totally.
Because my experience in Edmonton is a lot of there's like brew pubs.
Yeah.
Or there's breweries. There's not a lot of the tasting room culture like you were talking
yeah.
about. That was one thing that I noticed when I went to Red Deer is both Drummond and Troubled Monk are tasting rooms basically. So you can go in there and sit down and have a pint.
Yeah.
But very limited food options, like cheeses and meats and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Nothing that needs to be prepared.
Yeah, and that's nice kind of for your day-to-day, but when you get into the higher volume days, it's nice to have a truck parked out and
yeah.
give some more substantial offerings.
Yeah, and it was kind of neat to see the culture down there is that, in Red Deer at least, is that regulars will come in after work for a beer and then just head home afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, they're not looking for the food and beer and the whole thing. They just, you know, want to have a beer
just
and
a quick,
chat with some friends.
And
then, yeah, it was neat. When we were at Drummond, the lady that was bartending would have a beer poured based on the truck that pulled up. She knew what everyone drove.
Right,
and
she's
their preferred,
pairing, she's doing her,
preferred
yeah.
beverage. So it was good to go.
Yeah, I think the tasting room culture is incredible, and I'm super hopeful that Edmonton really starts to go down that road. And I think it just benefits the city, and it benefits the way people kind of organize themselves socially.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I think it might be time for the final review here of the Bench Creek. Does it have a name? The Black Spruce Porter.
Black Spruce.
The review.
All right. What do you think?
I love it. I don't know technically what else to say about it. I think that I think I don't know if I know enough to say in a public space what I think about beer.
You like it?
I love it. Yeah, that's what I know. I think it's clean. I think the finish is what is really nice about it. You get like a little bit of that bitterness, but it's really clean and easy drinking, and I'm a fan.
I agree. It's really good. Like, it has that heartiness that you kind of want to see mm-hmm. out of a porter or a stout. But like you said, it doesn't linger too long. It finishes really nice. and the color's just great. Sure. And yeah, we said earlier, there's some coffee, dried fruit, maybe a little bit of chocolate.
Yep.
Do you know what I really love? Porters that have a little bit of anise in them, the black licorice flavor. Yeah. That's great.
I think you almost get a little bit on this one.
All right. Well, I'm going to go 4.5 bottle caps out of 5. I'm a big fan. So, Trevor, what do you think?
I'll give him a 5.
5 out of 5.
Who am I to give someone less?
Especially when they supply you, right?
Exactly. It's hard.
That was like when we had Mike on last week. I was like, he's like, I'll abstain because it's his own brewery.
Exactly.
What are you going to say?
Yeah.
You say 5 and then you look like a homer. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on, Trevor?
No, I think that's great. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I mean, I just came in one day and was Instagramming about how much I love the space, and Trevor came over to me and introduced himself, and I asked him if he wanted to be on the podcast. So
here we are.
Excellent. So when's the alley open? How can people find you, et cetera, et cetera?
PlazaBowlingCo.ca is the website.
Okay.
PlazaBowlingCo for Facebook and Instagram as well. We're open 7 days a week from 11 a.m., 1 a.m. Friday, Saturdays, 9 p.m. Sundays, 5 p.m. Mondays, and 10 o'clock Tuesday through Thursday.
You don't sleep, do you?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, this is an amazing space, so please come check it out. I'd like to thank Trevor and the folks here at Plaza Bowl for having us today. Thanks for being the guest, and cheers, everyone.
Cheers.